Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you are listening to yet another exciting episode of Let Me In. I am, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo Ninalfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
Yes, they are alive. So, so for those of you out there who probably already know, the SNES Classic came out today, and as probably even more of you know, the SNES Classic came out today, and then poof, it's gone.
Yeah.
Good luck with the walk-ins. It ain't happening.
Yeah. Those things are disappearing pretty quickly. Yeah. And they actually did have put out larger shipments than they did with the NES Classic. So, but probably still not as many as they probably should have. But there you go.
Yeah, at least they're going to keep making them for a few months. So
yeah, we know that much at least.
Yeah.
And hopefully subsequent shipments are just as good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that they'll keep it. Maybe I can get it for Christmas this year, because unfortunately I couldn't get one. I literally walked in the store just after the last two were sold. So.
Yeah, and the store didn't have a limit, one per customer. So.
God, no. Damn it. Yeah, that's the thing. None of these places are limiting them to one per customer. Mm. That's really help out a lot, honestly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you could probably guess we're going to be discussing some things involving the stuff going down in Puerto Rico. Of course, we have a celebrity death, and Trump. And for those of you who don't know, Australia is gearing up to have a big plebiscite vote on whether or not to have same-sex marriage. Hmm. We'll be talking about all of that. Of course, we have entertainment news as well. Yep. And some other stuff, whether we can get to it or not, is going to be determined later. Now,
we've got stories to last all night, folks.
Yes, we do. Now, to start off the show, as always, Phil, what are you up to this week?
Well, this week it's been mostly audiobooks. I finished After On, which was fantastic. This book is kind of interesting in that it starts off with the narrator basically daring you to, and I quote, finish the fucker. And there's very good reason for that, because it throws just the weirdest shit at you early on. So it's like you have no idea what's going on, how any of these things are connected. They don't seem to be. Like, why would a bunch of funny Amazon reviews be related in any way to, a really badly written speculative fiction novel, which there are excerpts of in that book. It's a lot of things that will make you go, okay, why am I still reading this? If you're a persistent reader, the payoff in the end is fantastic. So, Rob Reed did a really good job with this book. I highly, highly recommend it. It's great. Mm-hmm. I also picked up Arcanum Unbounded by Brandon Sanderson. That's, mm-hmm. That's his Cosmere collection. Yep. It's like eight stories based in the Cosmere. And there's also, just like descriptions of the worlds and the planets and personal mm-hmm. notes from him. It's really nice. I just finished the Mistborn Secret History, which probably should have been its own novel because it was that long. But that one's about... you've read the Mistborn trilogy, Brandon?
Yes, I have.
So, at the end of the first book, even midway through the first book, Kelsier dies.
Yep.
Yeah, Kelsier has a problem doing what he's supposed to do, including staying dead. This whole story is about what Kelsier does while he's dead. And at the end of that story, Brandon basically noted that he had seeded hints in the original trilogy about that, And so now I'm going to have to probably go back and try to see if I can find them. So
yeah,
that's going to be fun. I haven't gotten to the Stormlight archive novella that's at the end, but yeah, you better believe I'm looking forward to
that. You know
that
the third Stormlight archive book is coming out, right?
Oh, yes, I know. November, I think it's November 14th is coming out.
Yep.
And yeah, I will be getting that, and I will probably not sleep those 2 days.
I still have to finish the first one. Because it's a good book, but goddamn, it is a brick.
Yep, it's a brick. At least it's not narrated by Scott Brick.
No.
Yeah, but yeah. So that's kind of been my week, just audiobooks.
What about you, Pat?
I did watch some more One Piece.
Mm-hmm.
Really trying to find a new ongoing anime series to latch on to. Still not sure this is it, but I really want it to be. I don't know. I'm only 16 episodes in, so it probably has to get going a little more, but yeah, I'm just not feeling it yet.
You know how Shonen Jump animes are. Some of them are have to have that filler.
Yeah, but usually filler doesn't hit until a couple hundred episodes in, well, at least 100 episodes in.
Yeah, that's true.
We're still establishing characters and just gathering the crew, and it hasn't reeled me in yet, I hate to say.
Yeah, well, the crew itself is actually fairly large, and it actually does take them a little while to get all of them. As I think, like, our last check, there's like a dozen or so members of the Straw Hat Pirates.
Well, I'm thinking right now the core cast, like, I think the only one out of the absolute core cast that they don't have yet is Sanji.
Ugh. That's true.
So, I don't know. I'm hoping it grows on me because I really need another series to get into in the absence of Bleach.
Yeah.
But, it's rough going so far. That's pretty much been my week.
All right, what about you, Chris?
The big thing I've been watching this week is The Flesh. Catching up on more of it. So I finished season 2, which ends pretty well. Then started season 3, where he just decides to do the stupidest thing. Which is like, hey, I saved the world in these other Earths, and I'm just going to go back in time and stop the Reverse Flash from killing my mother and see how that goes. Which I guess is the Flashpoint thing.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It doesn't go well.
No, really.
Hey, messing with the timeline doesn't go well. Mm-hmm. That's a big thing, and they kind of fix that in 2 episodes, then throw in the twist right at the end, like, oh, there's this one thing that's still wrong because you had to go and fuck with everything.
Mm.
And that's where I'm at, but yeah, so far so good. As for some games, Pinball FX3 came out this week, and I've been playing a good bit of that and just getting all the logistical stuff done, because importing your tables, or at least your licenses for the tables, is a little bit more work than you might think. So I did that I'm done with that on PS4. Xbox One will take a bit, because Xbox One, for whatever reason, craps out after a few tables.
Mm.
Almost like the store wasn't made for a game like Pinball FX3. Because it kind of points you to, like, oh, here's one table, go purchase that for free. And then it's, when you're done with that, it'll bring up the next one. After like 4 or 5, it's like, we're sorry, this table doesn't exist anymore. It's like, what? And then I guess that's just it must be kind of timing out at some point from doing too many sort of pings of the database or whatever.
Yeah.
Is there much of a difference between FX2 and FX3?
It's pretty much all in the client itself, where they've added this whole kind of meta, like RPG stuff to it.
Okay.
Outside of the game, where basically you play a table, and as you do things, there are six of these medals pertaining to things like hitting the bumpers, keeping the ball going for longer distances, ball saves, all these different things. And you earn these medals, and as you do them more, they level up, and those things will give you added score bonuses. So it'll be like, oh, you get 40% more points for, you know, bumper hits. You can equip two of those, and there's one slot for these wizard bonuses that require like doing something bigger.
Yeah.
I forget what those are because those are a little bit tougher to unlock. Those smaller ones are a lot easier to just get from playing the tables.
Yeah.
And so along with that, there are these mastery points they have for each table that is essentially kind of keeping track of your, I guess, mastery of the table. And so it's like, it's kind of like a mini leveling system for each table.
Okay.
Just to kind of keep track of things. And there's challenges for each table. I think all of them are the same. It's like how many points you can get for one life. How many points you can get in 5 minutes. And I think a survival one.
Yeah.
Which is you have to keep hitting point thresholds to keep the time going.
Yeah.
And as you do those, you earn the mastery points from that. And then all of this feeds into an overall XP system. So as you upgrade, get the upgraded badges, that sort of stuff, do the mastery stuff, the challenges, you earn XP. And that unlocks like Street Fighter style banners for your little player card,
yeah,
as well as like frames for your avatar, gamer pick, whatever you want to call it. And then overall, there are leaderboards, as you expect, the wizard score, that's like overall stuff, as well as the one that incorporates the scores that your friends get on your friends list.
Yeah.
So it has all of that. It has tournaments. And once it actually exists this time around, because I don't remember ever looking in that part of Pinball FX 2 or Zen Pinball 2 and seeing anything going on. I think I looked at it yesterday and it was like, oh yeah, there was one in 2014. There was one in 2015. It's like two of them. I was like, what? Nobody ever knew about this, but now anybody can set them up. Zen themselves have a few set up. You just join, post a score, and you can compete with everybody else that's playing it. And they can set up their own like specific things, like, oh, it's a one ball challenge, or you know, there are these specific changes or modifiers or whatever to it, which is pretty cool. And it's really nice way to get more challenge with ways to challenge the community as a whole.
Yeah.
And there's also straight-up multiplayer, like ranked multiplayer.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a weird thing, but when you load it up, it'll say, I think it's like bronze 3, like third bracket of the bronze. And so I assume you have to play multiplayer. If you win, you go up in ranks and all that, up to silver and gold and all that. I don't know how much I'm going to do that, but that's there. And when you're playing the tables themselves, they also have multiple options. You can play like a pure version of the table without the badges and all that.
Yeah.
I think that's where you can also do like the local multiplayer, online multiplayer, or co-op, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good package that sort of just adds more things to do than just the leaderboard stuff.
Yeah. I'll download the client and import the stuff I got from FX2.
And you only lose a few tables. I think the South Park tables.
Which I didn't have anyway.
Yeah, the Ninja Gaiden and Street Fighter tables and a couple others. But they've got kind of a new setup there. The way they organize them all, which I just put all the ones I owned as favorites.
Yeah.
So they're all in one section, and that outstripped whatever limits they had.
Yeah.
So there's like one column that's off screen. I can still highlight that with the cursor.
Whoops.
So I took a screenshot, posted it on Twitter, added them, and they're like, oh, we didn't think about this. We'll work on that. Which is good to see. And one of the cool things they added in this is a YouTube setting that turns off all the potentially infringing music.
Oh, that's nice.
So if you're trying to make videos, it does it all for you instead of you just having to turn off all the music.
Yeah, it just turns off.
Which is something that more games should do. Because it would be a good idea to make it as easy as possible for people to make videos on your stuff.
Yeah.
Especially when you got a game that's full of licenses.
Yeah.
They just released the Universal Pack with Back to the Future, E.T., and Jaws.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't tried that yet. I've been just playing the tables that I have, especially since I bought a bunch that I have not played it yet.
Yeah.
I played the Aliens table, and that's really good. There was a weird point where you get to actually just start fighting aliens, or I guess just facehuggers.
Yeah.
And you hit the ball to where Sigourney Weaver's character is at, and she just lights it on fire. Nice. And you use that to hit the specific facehugger ramp. Then it pops out and she shoots it.
Yeah.
And there's just some cool stuff like that in that. And obviously when you finish, you got Bill Paxton saying, "Game over, man! Game over!"
Of course.
which is good use of that. Mm. And yeah, there's some really good tables in there. And it's interesting getting to play some of this newer stuff. Mm. And just seeing how good they've gotten with that stuff for the most part.
Yeah.
Some of the early stuff is not great, or it's a little bit bland. But yeah, when they get to just go nuts with licenses and not worry about things like reality, they can make some really cool stuff. As for other things, I've been playing some NBA Live 18. I finally got a chance to install that and start playing it, and it reminded me why I don't buy physical Xbox One games. Because that was like a 45-minute process. But after that, that's been pretty good. The career mode I was playing starts off with the story of your player being like a big-time college player who tears his ACL in, I think, his sophomore year and potentially ends his career. But he works with one of his teammates who went to go pro, went undrafted, and sort of fell flat on his face. And you were kind of a duo called the Hype Brothers, which then you just start playing street games against a variety of pro players. And sort of work your way up to getting ready for the actual draft, sort of getting your chance to get in there. Then you play like an actual game against the other rookies to sort of determine where you're going to land in the draft.
Yeah.
Which the only bad part of that is it's all first to 21. So you're basically saying fuck you to everybody. I'm getting all these points because that's the only way you're going up in your rank. It's not a great way to play that stuff, or at least it the way to handle it. It would have been nice if that was just more of a like a four minute quarter game, regular game, because that's kind of what you do after that. So I got drafted 9th overall to the Knicks, which is bad. They're a terrible team. And immediately right after that, you get to set up the settings like you're playing a regular season. So you can sort of immediately just start doing whatever you want. So I set up like a full 82-game season, the regular playoff system and all that, the settings that I wanted. And you can just play it like a regular basketball game, not like what shit 2K does. They force you to go through a set storyline, skipping games, and doing all this stuff and having zero control over any of it, really.
Yeah.
Which is really nice to have a basketball game that does that, since that's something 2K hasn't done for 5 or 6 years at this point.
Yeah.
As well as, what was cool is right immediately after getting on setting stuff, it's like, hey, do you want to demand a trade? It's like, sure. And you can just immediately get traded to whatever team you actually want to play for.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to just play with whoever drafts you. So I was like, yeah, I want to play for the Cavs. And they traded me for some random person on there. And now I'm playing with a really good team.
Mm.
And that's really nice when those games actually give you a choice.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, you got to play with this, whichever team drafts you.
Mm.
It's like, sometimes I don't like that team. Especially
when it's the Knicks.
When it comes, yeah, and when it comes to basketball, because the draft is not always a great way to get to a team. Like if you're trying to mess with your draft grade, I think it was 2011 I wanted to play with Cleveland. They didn't have a pick that year. So it's kind of impossible to get onto the team I wanted. And that's not a good way to design that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, as for the actual game itself, it plays pretty well.
Which is a good improvement over the horror show that was last year's.
Well, there wasn't one last year.
Well, a couple of years back. Ago. Yeah.
I did the game face stuff, which is you load up the app on the phone, sort of take pictures, and it's supposed to create a created a character that looks like you.
Yeah.
And it sort of did that, but it decided my mouth was between my bottom lip and my chin. So I didn't notice this until I started playing. I was recording it because I had an inkling it looked weird. And all of a sudden, my mouth just went weird in a really terrifying way, and it was a horrendous monster. I have to see if I have the link to the GIF I made. It is really terrifying because you see my face, and then the part that's not my mouth opens up like a mouth. And it's like, oh, God, this went bad. I think this is it. There we go.
Yeah.
Here is the link. And after this game, I immediately changed it to one of the regular pre-made faces. So it's like, at least this will look decent.
That's not right.
And the bad thing is I can't load up the app anymore. I log in with my info and it's like, please retry login to Origin. Like, what? And then it just goes to like a blank screen. So I can't load it up anymore.
You can't change it.
So I don't remember if there were any settings or anything like that, but yeah, that went bad. And I didn't want to have nightmares, so I changed it.
Yeah.
And now everything's okay. As for other stuff, I've been playing more Destiny 2. They put out the first event that is all about the factions that were in the first game, the Future War Cult. The New Monarchy and Dead Orbits. You pick one of the sides, and you start just playing. And along the way, you get these tokens that you can donate to the vendor attached to your faction. And sort of the way it works is you get these like essentially like trash token things that you sell back for. It fills up like an XP bar. Every time you fill it up, it gets free, like essentially a loot crate in Engram in the Destiny case. So you just do that with the faction vendor. And these are all like specific items to these factions. So I picked the Future War Cult, which looks like if you put in 70s sci-fi design into Destiny. So there's like lots of bright colors and sort of that kind of Atari style, like after, like, I don't know how to describe it, like the colors following after your character, like in Bit Trip Runner, that sort of thing where you had like the rainbow running after him.
Yeah,
it's like trails. That kind of design. Yeah. It looks pretty cool. And I think whichever of the three factions has the most of these tokens earned, I guess, gets to purchase a special weapon for 1,000 glimmer. And the losers, I think, have to pay like 50,000 glimmer, which is not hard. I am constantly at like 99,000. The cap is 100,000, so yeah. I constantly have money and just spend it so I keep getting it. Yeah, that's been still fun so far. Kind of hitting a bit of a limit in terms of being able to get loot, like all the loot that drops in the regular parts of the game. They're all kind of capping out at, I think, 265 light. So I'm just constantly breaking that stuff down. And mainly I'm getting good stuff from doing the daily stuff or getting it from strikes and whatnot, which I have some good weapons and armor, so I look forward to playing more and hopefully getting towards the raid at some point. We're just having trouble lining up times for enough people. But I've also been doing more YouTube stuff. The free game I played this week was a Fortnite Battle Royale, which is pretty well done for being kind of a, I don't know if I would call it a rush job, but something that's very much still early in development. They still don't have like stats and leaderboards up yet, nor can you like design an actual character. It just kind of randomly picks one for you. So sometimes you're a woman, sometimes you're a man. Doesn't really matter either way, but it works pretty well. I was doing pretty well in the first match. I got a nice sniper rifle and a shotgun. Then somebody just ran up behind me and killed me as I was potentially trying to build some stuff. Built me like a barrier, and that was not fun. But overall, that game is pretty fun, and it's good to see that PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds has competition, because they're trying to do everything the right way, but it's also going to take forever. Because to get it onto PS4 is probably not going to be until fall 2018 at the earliest.
Yeah.
And here is this mostly good enough clone. It's out right now. So they got problems. And they're obviously super mad about it, threatening legal actions. Like, either sue them or don't. Stop fucking complaining about your game. It's already a clone of a clone of a clone.
Yeah.
Of a movie from 2000. As for the anniversary I celebrated, it's Eco. Turned 16. And, yeah, that was a lot of fun to jump into, especially because that game kind of set a lot of standards that a lot of indie games follow now.
Mm-hmm.
Things like, hey, you don't have to have HUD. You don't have to walk people through tutorials to explain the basic controls. Just let them figure it out.
Yeah.
And they'll be okay. And you know what? It's cool to focus more on style over pure gameplay and mechanics.
Yeah.
Things like that. I also put up a bonus video of the PS1 version of that game that they were working on initially.
Okay.
Which is kind of crazy to think that they were most of the way there on making it work on the PS1, but obviously didn't have the ability to do all of it and just moved it over to the PS2 to make it the game that we know and love now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
there is one thing about Eco and Shadow of the Colossus is that, you know, as old as those games are, because of the art direction, everything, they still hold up pretty well.
Yeah, definitely. I enjoyed that there is a zoom button on Eco that I was just looking at the wall textures and such. I was like, I think this is hand-painted textures. It looks
a lot of it is.
Yeah, it's like, this looks just rough enough that it looks like hand-painted stuff that they scanned into it. And same when you get like to the outside and you start looking at the environments, like some parts of this don't look great, but some parts just look really good.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're not looking too close at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, first thing first, I finished Ys8 last night. So that's another Falcom game under my belt. And the ending to that is, well, Dan Rep could probably tell you.
Another one of those, God damn it, Falcom.
Yeah. I mean, it does actually have a resolution and enclosure, but it's just weird. Like, it just all of a sudden goes, like, the last third, like, last quarter of that game just goes in this really odd direction, involving things like evolution and aliens, and it's just, it's weird.
That may be when they started on the drugs.
Yeah. But yeah, so I went ahead and that game's finished. So now my Xbox One is currently downloading Cuphead as we speak. Of course, this game has probably been... Well, I mean, that game's been pretty anticipated. Pretty much ever since it premiered, they first started showing off the previews, as short as they were.
Yeah, 3 years ago.
Yeah. It is a absolutely beautiful looking game. It takes all the aesthetics and styles of early 20th century cartoons and reminds you that they were all 100% grade A nightmare fuel. But gameplay wise, it's basically Contra.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing. Contra is a pretty good, foundation to build off of. But the thing is that, on top of that, there's also these really long, the boss fights are, some of them are less boss fights and more like puzzles, because they require a certain amount of patience and timing and figuring out a certain pattern. And actions that need to be taken. It's not just, regular, shoot, and hope it dies. It's a little bit more intuitive than that. And of course, it just looks good. I mean, the whole thing is hand animated, and it shows. But, other than that, I've also begun watching My Hero Academia, which is pretty much Shonen Jump's latest massive success. Yes, it is good. It is actually very unlike, I will say one of the things, you know how I said that, like, in some Shonen Jump anime that they have to, like, bring in some filler, or they have to, like, fill up some space to make a whole season. But the thing is, the actual manga moves so fast that they actually have to stretch some stuff out for the anime. Because, like, regular, like, you know how, like, in some shonen manga, they'll have, like, a tournament arc. And that tournament arc might go on for 5 or 6 volumes, you know? You know, sometimes a single volume will be dedicated to just one fight. But in My
and
Hero
those are usually a treat.
Yeah. But in My Hero Academia, the longest a tournament arc has lasted in that manga so far is like 2 volumes. Because there's just more stuff happening. And it has a lot more to say than just your regular shonen fighting manga. Because as anybody who has read My Hero Academia will knows, it's basically the sort of shonen manga's answer to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, when American superheroes becoming sort of a global thing because of it. And it sort of is basically about a world in which about 80% of the people on Earth have superpowers. And it basically, you know, it obviously so about everybody's got some kind of what they call quirks. That's the name they give for superpowers. And everybody has one. Most people have one particular. It can be everything from something as mundane as, you know, having some kind of magnetism or the ability to, you know, pull something towards yourselves. Or it can be something as big as, like, you know, being able to clap your hands together and cause an explosion. You know, it's like that.
That could be handy,
and
actually.
The thing is, yeah, it is. And as you can probably guess, because superheroes are actually a thing in this universe, there are fanboys. And, you know, these superheroes are celebrities, and they sort of play towards the celebrity ideal. They, you know, they're constantly trying to outdo each other in rank and popularity. Obviously, there's a lot of superheroes who are both regularly new or old school who, you know, do it because they want to help people and be a hero and inspire others. And then you'll have others who basically do it just for the attention. The basic sort of idea in this one is that you got this kid who was actually one of the 20% of the population born without a quirk. And what happens is that he really wants to be a hero because he's got this extreme sort of inferiority complex. And he wants to go into the Hero Academy, which is the sort of top school for young people with quirks to learn to train, get the quirks, learn how to use them, and eventually become regular heroes. But problem is of course, he doesn't have a quirk. And so what eventually happens is that he runs into the number one hero in this world, this guy who's sort of a Superman Captain American hybrid named All Might, who has a quirk that is actually something that he can transfer over to other people. But the problem is that because this kid is just getting it, his body is still learning to deal with it. Because the thing about All Might is that in his regular guise, it shows that his quirk actually does a very hefty amount of wear on his body. Because unlike Superman or Captain America, if he gets struck really, really hard, he can't just bounce back from it. It actually does affect him. In fact, when this guy finally meets All Might and sees him in his regular form, his respiratory system is basically shot because some dude hit him so hard in the chest that he basically collapsed both of his lungs. So what happens is that he gives his helps, you know, the main character sort of learn to get in better shape and sort of get into a physical ability where he can take the All Might's quirk and be able to sort of handle it. But the thing is that he's still kind of weak. And so whenever he tries to use it, he ends up doing some pretty massive damage to his body. The first time he uses it, he shatters his left arm and both of his legs. Fortunately, there's, you know, the academy has the school nurse on staff whose quirk is, you know, fast healing. So
naturally,
yeah. But it still has some serious damage that still lays over, like nerve damage and other stuff like that. And it's weird because the actual story does something that I have not seen a lot of other Shonen Jump manga do, which is it actually deconstructs a lot of the sort of tropes that are common in Shonen, in, you know, Shonen Jump. Stuff like the Determinator, you know, the guy who's going to do everything, he's going to reach his goals no matter how hard the stakes are and how hard he has to try and how much he has to hurt himself. My Hero Academia actually shows that a person who tries to do this, it might actually have some pretty long-term consequences. Like I said, the dude gets injured very badly every time he tries to use it. There's also the fact that what would happen to a society if 80% of its population suddenly had superpowers. You know, what that would actually do to human civilization. Because what ends up happening is not only does the 20% without the quirk end up becoming a, shall we say, a persecuted minority, but there's also the police are pretty much non-existent at this point. I mean,
because naturally they are.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you've got superheroes who can deal with all the crime, you know, why would you? And you've also got things like pollution and just in general, like the whole world has sort of become culturally stagnant because, you know, the existence of superhumans has sort of, it's sort of brought their world to a halt, basically. And there's just a lot of other stuff going on beneath the surface. It's for what looks like a very sort of 90s-esque style or early 2000s style shonen manga where with fights and stuff. It's actually a lot more intelligent than that. And, God, it is so good. I highly recommend it.
Is this the one? Maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree with One Piece.
Well, there's only one. I think there's only two seasons of the anime that are out right now, because it's fairly recent. And when
so
I
they're
say
just stopping it when they catch up to the manga instead of doing filler? Nice.
Well, it's Studio Bones, so
okay.
Take with that what you will. And the animation is actually really good. yeah, other than that... I got the second volume of The Land of Stories. I talked about this last time. The children's book series by Chris Colfer that is far better than it has any right to be. And I got that, and I just started that. Oh, yeah, and Asshole Stummer is almost over.
Yay!
Yeah.
Winter's settling in here, so that's nice.
Yeah, so next week... the temperatures finally go down. In fact, you know what? Let me check right now. Let's see. Yeah, starting Saturday. Yes, starting tomorrow, the high is supposed to be only like 85. So, and then it's going to like drop back down to 78 on Sunday. Yeah, and it's not going to get higher than 86 after that. So... Yeah.
Yay.
I am happy.
Yeah.
I fucking hate Asshole whole summer.
Don't we all?
Yeah. I mean, the thing, and the weird thing is, people forget the weird thing about Asshole Summer is that it's only Asshole Summer during the day. During the night, it drops down to fall weather. And early mornings can be freezing. Mm. But
yeah, but, you know, come around 10 to it starts getting really hot. So.
Yeah. Hmm. All right. So, anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, I guess then it's time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know what? This week, I'm going to show you something that you're going to hate for.
Uh-oh.
Something you're just going to hate. Like you were going to curse my name as you go to sleep tonight. All right. So, when people think of, like, the Middle Ages or the Dark Ages, one of the things we generally think is bad hygiene.
Uh-huh.
You know, the idea that people didn't bathe, or, you know, they didn't, or, you know, they didn't try to keep themselves as clean or whatever.
Hmm.
Here's the thing. That's actually, for much of the Middle Ages, that actually was not the case.
Hmm.
Because despite the way the religion and the culture changed, old Roman bathing culture actually managed to survive pretty well into until about the time of the Renaissance era.
Hmm.
You know, people still regularly bathed in lakes and streams, and of course they had bathhouses too.
Yeah.
In that era. So, you know, people still tried to get clean. They still tried to rinse themselves. So, you know, sort of the whole popular idea of like the mud and shit covered peasant is actually not that true. Yeah, I mean, a lot of folks in the Middle Ages actually were pretty, I mean, okay, technically maybe their hygiene wouldn't be quite as impeccable as ours was, but they did bathe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's important. And, you know, of course, it wasn't just in Europe. Of course, the Vikings also did, too. But then sometime around the Renaissance, people started to get this idea that that trying to bathe would actually harm your health. It went from everything from, like, you know, inhaling too much water vapor may kill you or cause disease, or the idea that if you constantly bathe, it'll make your skin too soft, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so right around the time of the Renaissance, you know, you've seen all those famous Renaissance paintings of all the naked people and stuff. Yeah, yeah, just remember, those were usually people that were not bathing. So, but here's the thing. Amongst other things, one of the, you know, like, by the, especially, like, one of the worst offenders of this, especially when it came to around the after the Renaissance, and sort of the, you know, what I guess we call the early modern period, is the one thing that people really did not do was wash their hair very much. They tended to, you know, use lots of oils and creams. France, in particular, was a massive offender here. There are stories of people going to, you know, Versailles, the palace at Versailles, during the days of the Ancien Regime, and, you know, basically just saying how, you know, the court of King Louis the Eighth, basically just stank to high heaven. Like, it was just, the stench was almost unbearable. But one of the other really worst offenders was the Polish.
Hmm.
And one of those relics of that is something now called the Polish plate, which was something that involved their hair. basically, everybody knows. Everyone kind of knows what happens. Don't wash your hair regularly, right? It gets oily. It gets stiff.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So imagine not only having your hair doing that, but also not cutting it.
Yeah, that sounds like either a recipe for disaster or 90s hair metal.
Yeah, the results that we still have were so utterly filthy that they've been preserved for posterity. There's one right there. That one's from the 1400s.
Okay, that's nasty.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed it was. Basically, because people did not bathe them or cut it, it would just keep growing and growing until it would just form this long, grotesque-looking head snake, basically. because hair was largely neglected, especially with the peasantry. And it wasn't unusual against the higher classes. It would just get, God, look at it. The thing you have to understand is that this was basically born out of superstition. Again, because of, people really did thought that, trying to bathe too much would hurt. They would not only develop this, but like their scalps would become inflamed with lice, and the scalp would, and it stank. God, they stank so badly. And the thing is, once it got to a certain length, not only would it get stank and just look ugly as hell, they would start using wax to keep it in shape.
because it's a fixture at that point.
Yeah, and after it got to a certain length, they started developing, like, satchels and handbags to, like, keep it in. Because it got so long.
That's developing a solution to a problem you shouldn't have.
Yeah, and but the thing is you can still find examples of this today. For example, here's a picture that's right here of a modern one. God, it looks just hideous.
Yeah. Ew.
Oh yeah, that's not the worst one that there is though. No, that I've seen. That would be this one. Oh wait, I might. Hold on, I might need to get proper. There it is.
Yeah, let's, I think I'll, shave my head now.
Yeah. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Brandon's random factoid. Good grooming is important, children.
Sad thing is that kind of thinking still exists today.
Yeah, yes, it does. Yes, of course it does. All right, well, okay, folks, it is now time for the proper show. We're going to start off, of course, with our assholes of the week. And as you can probably guess, both our assholes of the week and heroes of the week are largely having to do with the situation down in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
So it has been how many weeks since Hurricane Maria struck? Like, I think it's been close to a month now.
Yeah, around there.
Yeah. And, of course, Irma came in and just kind of made the situation even worse.
Well, it was Harvey, then Irma, then Maria.
Yeah. Wow.
It's been like one hurricane a week the past few weeks.
Yeah. Puerto Rico, just in general, is in really, really bad shape right now.
They weren't in great shape to begin with.
Yeah, we're talking Armageddon levels here. Most of the most of the island is still without electricity. Food supplies are fast running low. A lot of necessities are just getting used up very quickly. And no thanks to the incompetent actions of our own government. Because as I have to constantly seem to remind people, Puerto Rico is an American territory and its people are American citizens. That's important to emphasize here.
They also get the vote.
Yes.
These are your constituents, Trump.
Yeah. But see, here's the problem. As people have, Chris said, as some said earlier, Puerto Rico hasn't been doing so good the last few years, partly due to a rather crushing debt, which, by the way, our current president has a piece in.
Yep.
And as our asshole of the week, you know, he did something assholish. After Maria came through, he basically said Puerto Rico is to blame for its own problems.
Because, you know, of course, they're to blame for a natural disaster hitting them.
Yeah, three natural disasters.
Yeah,
hitting them, and you know, again, needs to be reminded. Trump defaulted on his So Trump used to have like a hotel golf course thing down in Puerto Rico, and he defaulted up on it at a tune of like I think it was like $33 million. And guess who had to make up for that? That's right, Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And that's what, the 700th property he had to foreclose on at some point?
Yeah, kind of lost count at this point.
Yeah. And it's not just in general, his administration has been absolutely fucking just useless in this fucking travesty. The other parts of the government, though, are trying to do their best. You know, FEMA is doing their best down there. You've got the Army and Navy delivering supplies by ship and by plane, you know, as much as they can. Of course, as everybody knows, Trump has been trying to do his damnedest to defund FEMA.
There was a bit where they had a bunch of storage containers full of stuff. But no drivers.
Right, that's right.
And that's kind of hard to get that stuff to the people when there's nobody to take it.
Yeah.
Because of, what was it, the Jones Act?
Mm-hmm.
So oh, and, all it, sorts
oh,
of
yeah,
shit
and
that
Jones Act thing, it took him so fucking long to renege on that thing.
That was like a week or so later?
Mm-hmm. Like, it should have been a day one fucking thing.
Yeah.
Like, you should have said, okay, we're wavering the Jones Act until everything is under control. Nope. I don't even fucking think he knows that Puerto Rico is technically part of the United States.
No, I don't think he does either.
And just the sheer level, just to tell you the sheer level of incompetence here, so it was released, supposedly it was released recently. There was I think it was like a Skype conversation or like an iPhone conversation where all the different agencies were trying to check in and letting them know, you know, what their plans were. So, you know, the FEMA, the Army Corps of Engineers, the Army and Navy, you know, the people bringing relief. And then finally it came time for the administration, and it says administration has no plans at this time. And this was like this wasn't even after, you know, Harvey. This was after Irma.
Yeah.
And I fucking swear. Have you guys ever heard of the Holodomor? It was this really awful, like, Soviet era famine in the Ukraine. That happened in the 1920s because of really shitty, like, mismanagement and shitty, you know, planning and just the fact that Stalin was a dick.
Mm.
Yeah, if Trump doesn't do something quick, he's going to see himself doing another one. Because this is fucking... He is, you know, just... so many of the people have at Puerto Rico have said, you know, who have fled the island, said, we're not coming back.
Hmm.
You know, he basically, if Trump does not do anything rational and competent here, he basically is going to be responsible for killing Puerto Rico, or at least letting it die.
Yeah, that might be part of his plan.
Yeah, but he said it's very tough because it's an island.
Yeah.
This is an island sitting in the middle of an ocean. It's a big ocean, a really, really big ocean. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean...
and then he's like, we got all our shippers and stuff we're talking about, and we aren't going to wait around so you can let your shipping magnate buddies profit off this shit, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And there's another quote here about how important Puerto Rico is to him. Puerto Rico is very important to me. The people are fantastic. I grew up in New York, so I know many Puerto Rican people.
No, that's not how that works.
You don't know. I mean, okay, actual.
There are a lot people of Puerto Ricans in New York, but
yeah,
they're not in Puerto Rico anymore.
No,
you don't know anything about the place.
Yeah.
But,
so hopefully we come out of all this where they get huge changes to their financial abilities to deal with debts and bankruptcy and all that.
Because
they need that. Or else this might all be for nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Trump isn't our only asshole of the week. We got another one, too. So in Australia, there's this health and wellness blogger.
Her name is Belle Gibson.
Yeah.
And so she was a very well-known blogger, and she has an app and all this stuff and books to sell to people, and at some point she decided to start claiming she had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she said she's had cancer a few times and claimed that she solved it by clean living.
Right. One.
And basically tried to sell books and stuff through the app. Basically suggesting people should just follow a healthy lifestyle and that will solve their problems with cancer, which let's just say that's evil. Telling people not to do the chemotherapy or whatever they need to do for their cancer.
Yeah, that's what killed Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So she very much got in trouble with the federal court in Australia and has been ordered to repay $410,000, which is supposedly about how much she made off of all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more here about how she didn't even really show up to court very much.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just had her lawyer go for her, wasn't, you know, doing testimony or much of any of that stuff.
Yeah.
So very much pissing off the judge that way.
Yeah.
Let's see. Mortimer ordered Gibson to pay a penalty of $90,000 for her false claims that she would make donations for the sale of her app. Oh, yeah. She claimed she would donate to charity, portion of her funds.
Mm.
Didn't do that.
Mm.
$90,000 for false claims her company would make charity donations. $50,000 for false claims that following her app launch she would donate to charity. $150,000 for false claims she would make donations to the Schwartz family, whose son suffered brain cancer, and $30,000 for false claims that she would donate to charity off the back of a Mother's Day event.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So not only faking cancer, trying to bullshit people into buying stuff from her, but also lying that she would donate to charity.
Hmm.
Just all around great asshole, and I think I was saying she's only 25, so...
Hmm.
She's done this real early in life.
Yeah.
People don't like it when you try to defraud them for the help. Yet. Just
and try
FYI.
And try to encourage purchases by saying a portion of the proceeds will go to charity. It's called false advertising.
Yeah. It's also called being a scumbag.
Yep. So, fortunately, to wash our mouths out from that shit, we do have Heroes of the Week. And, yeah, a lot of people have actually stepped up to help out the folks in Puerto Rico. So yes. We'll just kind of go through these a little quickly. Royal Caribbean actually canceled one of the cruises that they were planning so that they could use the vessel to help deliver supplies and evacuate stranded individuals. So,
yeah, a lot of people that worked with them, as well as their families and such, and other important people that need to get out, at least right away. But, yeah, like one of the big problems is just getting vehicles and such down to the island.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So having some of these cruise companies be able to actually help out is big.
Yeah. You know, big ass. You can put a lot of cargo in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, Pitbull is lending his private plane to help transfer cancer patients for chemotherapy. So he's, you know, helping them out of Puerto Rico and getting them into the state so that they can get some get that much needed chemical therapy.
Yeah.
Mark Cuban actually lends the team plane to a player to deliver supplies and bring people back. Team is this?
The Dallas Mavericks.
The Mavericks.
And the player is JJ Barea, a Puerto Rican player. So, the plane only holds about 60 people, since it's only supposed to transfer a team. But yeah, he basically took a bunch of supplies in the first run. Then the second run brought back his family and a bunch of other people that he could. And I think they're planning to do a couple more runs, just bring more supplies there, as well as just get more people out that need to. And just one of the cool things that athletes have been doing over the last week or so.
Tidal and Fat Joe both teamed up to send about 200,000 pounds worth of supplies to Puerto Rico.
And this is part of the next story as well. So the New York governor, Cuomo, set up this what's called Empire State Relief. I forget what the rest of the name is. It's a pretty long name. But essentially a whole big organization dedicated to funneling resources down to Puerto Rico and all that. And Tidal and Fat Joe and a couple other rappers have been teaming up to start sending some supplies down. So they're using a plane that they procured and are taking donations from people in New York, hoping to get a ton of stuff to send down and help out.
Yeah.
I think they're doing that this weekend.
Because the administration didn't seem to figure out how that works, but everybody else seems to be able to.
I think on September 30th at the Jacob Javits Center, they're going to be taking donations. He's going to be there himself, Fat Joe, and hoping to get that sent out a few days later.
Yeah. And finally, Jennifer Lopez, J-Lo herself, Puerto Rican, donated $1 million to New York's Empire State Relief Organization.
Yeah.
Yep. She's one of the co-chairs for it. So she very much felt like she had to do her due diligence and help out. And I think they say here that pretty much they contacted a bunch of rich people they know, the various people that are chairs, and nobody has turned it down. They also said, what do you need? We'll do as much as we can.
Yeah.
And so that's great news to see.
Yeah.
All right. And that rounds up our Heroes of the Week. Stay strong, Puerto Rico. And let's just hope something good comes out of all of this. All right. Now, on to the show proper. First, we have to sadly announce the passing of none other than Mr. Playboy himself, Hugh Hefner. He passed away this week at the age of 91.
Yeah.
And, well, I mean, it's really hard to overemphasize the impact he's had, not just on American culture, but Western culture and world culture in general.
Not really a part of American life he hasn't touched.
Yeah. No. So, Hugh Hefner, who, of course, was a World War II veteran, and, of course, famous publisher, famously started the very first issue of Playboy magazine back in 1953. Was it 1954? I can't remember which one. That first issue famously had its first centerfold, which was none other than Marilyn Monroe herself in the nude. Exactly. The story of how he actually got that picture in the first place is actually kind of a roundabout, because basically Marilyn took those photos really early in her career, and the photographer handed them over, and then he was offering them to people who would pay top dollar for it, and Hefner just happened to be the guy who was willing to pony up cash, and that's how it ended up in the first issue of Playboy. That first issue also carried some excerpts from the famous Italian romance, The Decameron, which is these days considered a classic of Western literature, but at the time was not available in the United States because of its sexual frankness. You also, you know, in Playboy, they had amazing journalism.
Yeah.
I know the whole joke is that I read Playboy for the articles, but it's true. The articles are pretty damn good.
Yeah.
If you do, you're getting your money's worth out of it.
Yeah. And it had some of the most amazing interviews of people you'll ever find. My personal favorite is the interview that Alex Haley. You guys know who Alex Haley is? Guy who wrote Roots.
Mm-hmm.
He also ghost wrote the autobiography of Malcolm X.
Yeah.
He did an interview with George Lincoln Rockwell, the founder of the National Socialist American White People's Party.
Yeah.
You know, which was like the first neo-Nazi party in America, and that interview is just great. They also had that famous interview with Jimmy Carter, where he basically said that I have sinned in my heart many times. You know, I have committed adultery within my heart, and all this stuff. And of course, had some pretty amazing short fiction as well from all types of amazing writers, from everyone from Ursula K. Le Guin to Norman Mailer to all kinds of great writers. Of course, The Naked Ladies. Who can forget that? Holy shit, it was like the main attraction.
Yeah, it was, and, you know, all of the centerfolds were always done very tastefully, so...
Yeah, you know, very tastefully. He is very much very much responsible for the sexual revolution in America and around the world. Because of him, we no longer approach the topic of sex the way that our forebears did.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, at best, we just didn't talk about it, and at worst, we treated it like the Black Plague.
Mm-hmm.
It was like the whole thing with I Love the Lucy Show, where they slept in separate beds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I forget what the first show was where they slept in the same bed. Was that like the Brady Bunch or something like that?
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, they couldn't even show Lucy pregnant.
Mm.
Or even say the word pregnant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even the mention of toilets wasn't allowed, you know? And don't even think about homosexuality, which was universally illegal throughout the United States at the time that magazine premiered.
Yeah.
Playboy can very much be credited with basically just putting a death nail in American prudishness.
Hmm.
Yes.
Um,
still have a ways to go, but
Yeah, still a ways to go, but, and of course, well, Hugh Hefner himself was quite the character.
Yep.
He was a philanthropist, serial fornicator. I don't hold that against him. he was a longtime supporter of LGBT rights at a time when, again, it was still illegal throughout the United States.
Yep.
People were still getting arrested for it. He also is sort of the guy who finally helped kill a lot of our, Puritan censorship laws about things like I mentioned the Decameron. You know, his magazine was one of the first to print the Decameron uncensored in the United States. He helped get writers like Allen Ginsberg and, who was the other one? William Burroughs, popularity, helped them with their censorship cases. The thing is, though, Hugh's legacy might be just a little mixed dealing with the fact that, and it's really, you can't really avoid it. He basically did a lot of his, made much of his industry on the objectification of the female body. And, of course, I'm not going to badmouth or say anything bad about women who posed, because, you know, they were adults and they consented. But inadvertently, he created, well, for one thing, he inadvertently created an unrealistic body expectations.
Yeah.
In certain areas, especially when the 80s came around and the breast implants became a thing.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, there's the other big thing was all the airbrushing and the touching up that they would do.
Yeah.
You know, the trimming of the pubic hair and the, you know, just it sort of set an unrealistic expectation for women to an extent. Also, to be honest, his private life in the last few years kind of started to resemble R. Kelly's sex cult. Yeah, have you guys read about that?
No.
The whole, like, he had like a whole harem of women that he had like a really strict schedule for. They all had to be home at 9 p.m. sharp. He had them on strict health regimens and all this stuff.
They were as young as his grandchildren.
Probably great grandchildren. Some of them. Like I said, the man was 91.
Yeah.
Of course, by then he didn't control the Playboy empire anymore. Anywhere he hadn't for well over a decade at that point. He given it over to his daughter, who in turn has given it over to his son. I think, or her son, I can't remember. But and of course, he also kind of sort of started the whole modern porn industry that has a really bad dark side to it if you're not wary enough to look out for it.
Yeah.
So,
you hear the weird thing about where he's buried?
He's buried next to Marilyn. He literally bought the burial plot next to her.
That's
creepy.
Creepy.
And he did that long ago. Basically,
he did that.
It's well worth it to spend $75,000 to spend rest of eternity next to Marilyn Monroe.
That's all it cost him?
Yeah.
And of course, with the publication of Playboy, many imitators and would-be pretenders to the throne, including the likes of Penthouse, Hustler, Gentleman,
all those sorts of magazines you're embarrassed to pick up if you go into the store.
Yeah.
And especially Hustler. Hustler is like the whereas Playboy is sophisticated, Hustler is lewd and
crass, I would say.
Yeah.
Crass. Yeah.
Let's just put it this way. You don't have the excuse of reading it for the articles.
In Hustler.
Yeah.
No, you don't. But yeah, so R.I.P. Hugh. The world's just as sticky as you left it. All right, so moving on from there, we got political stuff. So once again, yet another attempt to get rid of Obamacare came about this week. Mike Pence, Vice President Mike Pence, actually threatened Alaska, the state of Alaska, with Canadian-style health care if Graham Cassidy bill failed.
That's a threat?
Yeah, that's what I was
saying.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's a threat?
Yeah, because he thinks it's failing health care up there.
Yeah. Which, of course, Phil, being our Canadian friend, could tell you that is very much not the case.
No, it's not perfect, but it works for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
yeah, I think his quote here is, you know, somewhere in between where I'm sitting in Washington, D.C., and Alaska is a place called Canada. I probably don't need to tell the people in Alaska about the failings of national socialized health care because it's right in our neighbor and you see the results every day.
Yeah, well, you people got go Justin to Canada Trudeau. To get...
I could just imagine Justin yeah, Trudeau looking at that quote and going, what the fuck are you smoking?
Yeah. And here's the thing you need to know. Socialized medicine has won the debate. It's coming.
It's pretty much everywhere in the world except the U.S. at this point.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that one of the biggest ways we pay off our health care is through crowdfunding sites like GoFundMe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, I've heard a lot of people in Europe and such just have no idea why the hell that is a thing here.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, that third attempt at Obamacare? Yeah, it failed.
Yeah.
So. At least for now. They said they're going to take it on the road sort of the way it should go. Like how it went for Obamacare back in the day. It's like, hey, go actually talk to the people this is going to be for, because apparently there's lots of quotes here of, oh, the people in Alaska need different things than people in Hawaii and Florida. It's like, well, no shit. It's the whole fucking point. That's why it's so hard.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They're going to ship this thing on the road and they're going to find, they're going to have a rude awakening. Because they're going to find, they're going to find out, no, actually, Americans in general are okay with the idea of socialized medicine, even if we don't call it that.
Yeah.
You know, and if you just show how you can pay it and how you can work it into the budget and, you know, show it how it can be paid, you know, it's not a, it's really a no-brainer.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, no, that, and you really have to, I will give them, the Republicans, credit in that they have absolutely managed to absolutely just go beyond a layer of bullshitting I didn't think was humanly possible.
Yeah, like, as soon as this stuff started coming up about Graham Cassidy, like, everybody's like, no, you're lying about this, 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 and this.
Yeah.
And they continue to say, oh, it doesn't do this and this. And it's like, no, it fucking does. You are fucking
lying. Like, I can take the page and point it to you, you know? I can read it aloud and, you know, trace my finger across the sentence as you watch, if you want me to.
Yeah. It's like, man, you guys are so hell-bent on getting rid of Obamacare, you don't care about things like facts.
Yeah. No, they really don't.
No.
Because here's the thing you need to know. You know the reason why they're trying to get rid of Obamacare? Tax cuts. That's pretty much the number one thing. Tax cuts for the wealthy. That's what they want to do. That's why their donors got them into office in the first place.
Yeah, and they're not secret. What is it, the Koch brothers?
Yeah.
Essentially paying for a deadline to get this done.
Yep.
Or else they were withholding campaign funds. It's like, that's a great way to do healthcare.
Yeah. But yeah, just the idea that, you know, having one of our own major leaders threatening people with socialized medicine as if it was a bad thing.
And you remember they were bribing Alaska, like, okay, yeah, you pay.
What was this, Lisa Murkowski?
Yeah. Hmm. You vote for us and you get to keep Obamacare.
Yeah.
Like, what's She's the like, point of no. even voting for it?
Yeah.
They wouldn't get it either way. It's only one is a bribe and the other is at least somewhat honest.
Yeah. Okay. Eventually, either these guys are going to get it through their head that Americans want socialized medicine, or three things could happen. Either one, they get it through their head and realize Americans want socialized medicine and finally get over their own egos to pass it. Number two, they don't realize it and they end up getting voted out.
Very likely.
Or number three, they somehow successfully manage to get rid of Obamacare, and then the next thing you know, you're going to see their heads on pikes in Washington, D.C.
Hmm. So, that's not likely. Well, at least the second part would be.
I can see that play out.
Hmm. Yeah. Because, you know, Washington, D.C. isn't just, you know, the White House and memorials. There's a whole city around there, mm-hmm. and really, really fucking hate the people in office right now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so more political news. So the Germans had their recent election. Angela Merkel is once again prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
However, this is the part to be concerned about. A group called Alternative for Deutschland, Alternative for Germany, a right-wing to far-right-wing political party, is now going to be the opposition party inside the German parliament.
Hmm.
Yeah, right now they have like 1/8 of the parliament.
Hmm.
Yeah. There are reasons to be cause for concern, and here's part of the reason. Alternative for Germany is an indirect descendant of the National Socialist German Workers' Party.
Hmm. Yeah, that could be a problem.
You know.
The Nazis.
Yes. So it's kind of a weird, long story of how this came about. But, okay, so what you need to know is in 1945, World War II ended and the Nuremberg trials commenced, the Nazi Party was dissolved. It was just said, nope, this place no longer exists. Fuck you. It's gone.
Membership was basically outlawed.
And the thing is, Germany has been fairly good with being able to keep these types of parties who are hoping to be the successor to the Nazi parties from ever being able to legally gain any kind of real power, because they're able to find out who they are. And, of course, everybody knows how the laws work in Germany. If you are in any way have a positive view on the actions of the Nazi regime, the Holocaust, or any of the territorial gains or anything at all, any type of symbology or rhetoric, they do not tolerate that shit in Germany.
No.
Yep. You're done.
Yes, you are fucking gone. After the Nazi Party was erected, dissolved, there were a couple of other groups that would pop up trying to perhaps not publicly but, you know, in private trying to take up the mantle of the Nazi Party. So this is groups from, for example, the let's see, there was the so yeah, and it's like a long, convoluted and weird group. So there was the after the there was the German National People's Party, which was basically, unlike Nazis, was Marxist and traditionalist in its views, but still very right-wing and anti-Semitic. And the thing was, the German National People's Party, eventually, after, so technically German National People's Party started before the Nazis, and then they became part of the Nazi Front, and then they still remained after the Nazis were over, and then they were dissolved. So then after them came another group called the German Right Party, which came out in 1946, which was a national conservative party. And it ended up attracting a number of former members of the Nazi Party into its Shocking. Group. And they ended up creating their own into a Nazi program. And then it merged into another organization called the German Empire Party. And it basically disappeared in the early 60s. So then after that, there was another organization that came up called the National Democratic Party of Germany. And it came into existence 52 years ago, and it is now considered illegal. It is because of its, it is not allowed to go for elections. And even when it's tried to go for elections, it completely fucking loses. It doesn't have a single member in the Bundestag or the state parliament. The only member it has is this one douchebag in the European Parliament, and nobody pays attention to him. but for all purposes, they just do not exist anymore. There was, in fact, an official attempt to ban them in 2016, and it failed, but the bad press basically decimated them. And so finally what happened is during the in 2013, a Eurosceptic party, which we now know as Alternative for Deutschland, Alternative for Germany, came into existence, and it was primarily made up of old school conservative economists and professors. But even though that wasn't really what they wanted to do, guess who they ended up attracting?
Nazis.
And so now their program is now explicitly quote unquote pro-family. They oppose gay rights and gay marriage. They oppose Islam and the quote unquote infiltration of Islam within Germany. They are Euroskeptics. They are hardcore German nationalists, and they are also anti-immigration. So, Nazis.
Yeah, I think they went from the smallest of these groups to the third largest.
Yeah.
There's six total.
And, yeah. And as of now, they have they got major. So in the state parliaments right now, they've actually got 166 members and two in the European Parliament. So, as you can probably guess, Germany did not. The people in Germany were not quiet about this.
Yeah.
There was demonstrations of 100,000 up to 1 million people.
Yeah.
Showing no, fuck you.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. You know the reason why Alternative for Deutschland managed to garner so many votes?
No.
The same way that the Front National and UKIP managed to get it. It were protest votes.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's a good way to send a message.
Yeah. Really should think about those protest votes.
Yeah. So here's the best case scenario is that alternative for Deutschland ends up goes the way of UKIP in that they make such colossal asses of themselves that they basically lose all power within the next election.
Hmm. Probably likely.
I really do not expect anything on par with Hitler.
No.
Ever coming back.
Yeah. Not with Germans, only an eighth of the parliament.
Yeah.
I would say, not this time, motherfucker.
Hmm. Yeah. And also because, you know, well, the conditions are different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the conditions that got Hitler into power are very, very anachronistic related to the modern era.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, Germany got a bill for World War I.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to remember at the time that Hitler came into power, Germany's economy was in free fall. Because of the Versailles Treaty, they were basically given the bill for World War I and made the scapegoat for all of that bullshit.
Yeah.
And because of that, Germany's just entire national infrastructure just imploded.
Yeah.
Government was ineffective. There were various paramilitary groups doing street battles.
Hmm.
You know, the Nazis were just one of them. Yeah. There was a bunch of other ones too. The Deutschmark suffered extreme hyperinflation to the point that people would go to groceries carrying Deutschmarks in wheelbarrows. And then, of course, you know, there was just the extreme instability within Germany itself. The reason that Hitler managed to become chancellor in the first place wasn't because he was elected there. The Nazis could only ever get about 32% of the vote at most.
Hmm.
But he managed to – basically, the prime minister managed to convince I'm trying to remember who was – the king in Germany at that time. For those who don't know, the prime minister at that time was Hindenburg.
Hmm.
And somehow they believed that they could keep their conservative agenda going if they could get the Nazis into a coalition because they believed that the general government would keep a leash on them. That didn't work.
Hmm.
Because once the Reichstag fire happened, Hitler managed to convince enough people that the country was in crisis and he needed extraordinary powers, and well, the rest is history.
Yeah.
So Germany is nowhere near that level of disaster right now.
No.
So
you also have to keep in mind that since then, now Germany has a very ingrained culture of punching Nazis in the face. So yeah, that's not going to go well for them.
There's a reason that's important.
Mm.
Yeah. And yes, remember to bash the fash.
Hmm.
Bash the fash with a gash and a lash. Now,
every opportunity.
Whenever it presents itself. Now, moving on. President Trump now has a new travel ban. It adds the countries of Chad, North Korea, Venezuela, and it drops the Sudan.
Okay.
Which I guess we're still waiting on the Supreme Court stuff next month.
Yeah.
I guess the recent restrictions that they put into place has expired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to keep fighting this for probably the duration of his term.
Yeah.
And also, of course, in that travel ban is still Iran, Libya, Somalia, and Syria. So, yeah, and, oh, by the way, speaking of, travel, I kind of wish Lee was here to gloat with me on this. Tom Price, who was, the Health and Human Services Secretary, he got in a little trouble when people found out he'd racked up, over $1 million worth of travel expenses on private chartered flights, which, by the way,
austerity.
Yeah.
And offered to pay back about 50,000 of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's gone. He resigned earlier this afternoon.
Unfortunately, he's just
off the island.
Yeah.
Yes, that makes the 14th person to have resigned or been fired from the Trump administration so far.
Yep. Yeah, Equifax is looking at the Trump administration and going, "Phew, glad we're not them."
Yeah. So, speaking of, whew, glad I'm not there, Alabama. So for those who don't know, Jeff Flake, you know, he was originally a senator from Alabama, but then he had to, you know, leave his seat when he joined up with the Trump administration. Mm. And so they had to have a runoff election. And the insurgent candidate actually managed to win that special election. The other candidate was the establishment candidate that was supported by Donald Trump and who he tweeted support for and then immediately removed him from his Twitter handle once he lost.
Yeah, and this new guy is more of a Trump candidate than the other guy.
Yeah, partly because Steve Bannon helped vouch for him. Hmm. I'm talking,
I don't know why Alabama's listening to him, but hey.
Yeah. We're talking, of course, about Roy Moore. This guy is like a W-era hardcore Christian conservative type dude. He became infamous for being, you know, debenched as a head of the Alabama Supreme Court when twice. I want to
somehow matter. He got back on it and then kicked.
Yeah,
back
he was
off
elected
again.
Back on it.
Yeah, like what?
Yeah, so the first time he got kicked off because he installed this Ten Commandments monument in front of the Alabama courthouse, and of course that's against
that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's that
there's
guy.
There's a couple of those guys at least.
No, he's this guy. It's that guy, and he basically would not remove it, and so they had to fire his ass. And then he went back. He became Chief Justice again. And then he was finally removed for the second time after he ordered all of the courts in Alabama to ignore the Supreme Court ruling legalizing same-sex marriage all across the United States.
All right.
That's a great way to get yourself fired a second time.
Yeah, also said a lot of stuff like homosexuality should be illegal.
Uh-huh.
9/11 was a form of punishment from God. I guess he's one of those guys.
Yeah.
The 700 Club with Jerry Falwell talking about this.
That's Pat Robertson.
Oh, it's saying here.
Jerry Falwell was also on.
He might have been on it
with
him.
Thing.
Yeah.
The attacks got allowed the attacks to happen because America had become a nation of, quote, pagans, abortionists, feminists, gays, lesbians, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the people for the American way.
Yeah.
As Jerry Falwell said that.
Yeah.
Pat Robertson agreed
and,
with him.
He basically, yeah, he also said that Keith Ellison should not be allowed to become a congressperson because he was a Muslim. Yeah, he's one of those big, like, creeping Sharia conspiracy nuts, too. During his speech while he was giving before the vote went out, he wielded a gun.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Naturally.
Yeah.
So he's gone now. But no, actually, no, he got elected. For some reason.
No,
well, he's not elected,
he
was nominated. Oh. There's a Democrat, there. He does have a person in the Democrat, yeah.
Hmm.
They're having that election in December, I think.
Yeah.
So Luther Strange is in the Senate for now until that happens.
Mm. Yeah.
And we see if we've got a new crazy guy in the Senate or somebody that's reasonable.
Mm. Yeah. Here's the thing. This is going to be a serious headache for the GOP if he does get elected. because despite their illusions that they try to give, they've actually been trying to move away from that part of the electorate for the last few years. And then, of course, when Donald Trump got elected, and that basically just put, yeah, Donald Trump's very existence as the nominee and eventual elected president basically shows that, no, the GOP really doesn't give a shit about family values at all.
Nope. Well, he had one of those sorts of reverence during one of his speeches.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about the evils of gay people and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, which obviously was a huge blow to his campaign.
Yeah. Hopefully the people of Alabama are smart enough. Yeah, I can't even say that with a straight face. God damn it.
Not even going there.
No, I'm just... Just if you pray, just pray that, you know, all the voting machines malfunction that day.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
doesn't matter what button you push on the voting machine, it just votes for the other guy.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right. So moving on. Sports news. Everybody knows now about the take in the movement.
Mm-hmm.
Good thing. I support anyone who does it. And of course, everybody knows Trump just had to be the man baby he is and complain about it.
Well, basically tried to change it from being what they're actually protesting to, you know, protesting the national anthem or the flag, which is not part of anything that these athletes were ever protesting.
Nope.
Yeah. But, obviously, the NFL itself is having nothing of it. Not of the taking anything, but Trump's bullshit. And the coach for the Spurs, Greg Popovich, basically went on a media day press conference and basically took a giant shit on Donald Trump.
Yeah, this is the NBA, so we talked about him before. He's very much a guy that... despite being an Air Force Academy graduate and military veteran, he very much does not fall into a lot of the bullshit that Trump and the GOP tries to brainwash people with about, oh, the national anthem and all that stuff they do before games is all about honoring.
Which, by the way,
country.
Just quick trivia. Teams didn't even come out for the national anthem until 2009. So this is actually a very recent thing.
Yeah.
And the NFL, and then they started taking money from the government to do that stuff.
That's why you see all the military and flag stuff.
It's no coincidence that they just happened to get returning veterans to reunite with their families. It also happened to be at the game.
Yeah.
Well, they all coordinate and all this stuff. Mm.
Yeah. For the record, bringing returning variants and reuniting with their families is not a bad thing. It's a very good thing. That's not that's not the problem.
Yeah.
No, it's just an obvious show of propaganda.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's using their emotional joy for promoting the greatness of America.
Yeah.
To people that already know it's great.
Yeah.
And if you want to see a movie that really deconstructs that, watch Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Greg Popovich here said some great stuff. Our country is an embarrassment in the world. This is an individual that when people held arms during games, he thought that they were doing it to honor the flag. That's delusional, but it's what we have to live with. You've got a choice. We can continue to bounce our heads off the walls with this conduct, or we can decide the institutions of our country are more important. People are more important. The decent America we all have and want is more important. Get down to business at the grassroots level and do what we have to do. We do live in a difficult time. We all know why, where the source is, where a lot of the division comes from. To dwell on that is the wrong way to go. It's so obvious now. It is boring. The childishness, the gratuitous fear-mongering, and the race-baiting has been so consistent it's almost expected. The bar has been lowered so far. I think it's more important to be thinking about what to do, more organic grassroots-based level. He also goes very well later on. Let's see. I'm an individual. I live in this country. I have a right to say and do what I want. It has nothing to do with my position. Obviously, race is the elephant in the room. Remember, Trump was trying to say race was not a factor in any of this when talking about sports that were dominated by black people. And we all understand that unless it is talked about constantly, it's not going to get better. People get bored. Oh, is it that again? They're pulling the race card because it's uncomfortable. There has to be an uncomfortable element in this course for anything to change. Where does LGBT, women's suffrage, race, it doesn't matter. People have to be made to feel uncomfortable, especially white people. We should have no clue what being born white means. If you read some of the recent literature, there is no such thing as whiteness, but we made it up. Not my original thought, but it's true because you were born white. You have advantages systemically, culturally, psychologically there. They have been built up for hundreds of years. Many people can't look at it. It can't be something on their plate on a daily basis. People want their status quo. People don't want to give it up. Until it's given up, it's not going to be fixed.
Yeah.
And there's more. He's very much a guy that obviously works with a lot of people of various races and countries and creeds.
This guy is with the NFL, right?
The NBA.
The NBA.
Hmm. NBA, okay. Yeah. Yeah, if you work in the NBA, there's no getting around it. You're going to be working with people who are African-American, Latino, Asian.
I think he has an Argentinian player, French player, black players, white players, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And obviously being a military veteran, he has plenty of work, both with people of various countries as well as a lot of the people in the military and how things go there. He is very much a well-rounded person.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that not many people are.
Yeah.
Especially like our president.
Mm.
Who thinks he knows all about Puerto Rico because there are Puerto Ricans in New York.
In New York.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. So for those of you who don't know, in Australia, I'm pretty sure I already mentioned this, but for those who don't know, they've got a plebiscite vote happening where they're getting ready to it's a plebiscite, which I can't remember if a plebiscite actually means anything or if it's just like a ceremony or just like gauging the overall opinion. But basically, they're having it over legalizing same-sex marriage in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a couple things about this whole debate that I've noticed. The main one being that it's basically playing out almost exactly the way it played out in the United States.
Yeah.
People are outing themselves really easily.
Yeah, you're hearing the same rhetoric almost word for word.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's probably not a coincidence because I'm pretty sure a lot of the marriage people here in the United States are working over there as well.
Good. Yeah, don't read the comments because you'll see all those same arguments being made.
Yeah.
About ruining families and all that stuff.
Yeah, which basically makes you realize, no, they really are full of shit.
Yep. Totally full of shit.
And, here's the other thing. No crowd have proven themselves to not be very nice people.
Mm.
So there was a dog that was wearing a pro marriage equality scarf, and apparently they tried to kick it and yell slurs at it.
Let's see. This is involving a dog sitter. So this woman that wrote this this piece. Had to do something. She wasn't able to take care of her dog, so she dropped it off at a dog sitter who took it out to a park to let him run around and all that. And this guy came walking up, just starts yelling at her. The only quote they have here is, "perverted fucking poofter, a degenerate and dangerous," referencing the same-sex marriage survey, because he has a marriage equality, same-sex equality, like handkerchief or whatever around his neck, and tries to kick him and whiffs. But still means he wanted to kick that dog just for having this little handkerchief on his neck.
Yeah.
Because the owner supported this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a shitty person.
Yeah.
Sadly, there are a lot of shitty people.
I think Greg... I think it was Greg Proops who famously said that Australia is like Arkansas with a beach.
Yeah, kind of.
An entire continent with a no fat check sticker on it, yeah. That type of thing.
Unfortunately, they also have AC/DC, so...
Yeah, AC/DC, Midnight Oil,
yeah,
NXS.
Wildlife that should be ranked among the world's militaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
Yeah, so, Anthony Scaramucci.
The Mooch
has created the Scaramucci Post, which is a centrist news site that's going to launch in, I guess that's October. Yeah. So it's going to be launched on October Monday. 2nd. On Monday.
And all he says here is the site will report on, quote, what is right and wrong in society now instead of what is left and right.
Yeah.
He was wearing like a t-shirt that says the Scaramucci Post on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And this is going to be a shit show, I assume.
This will probably lead to some Let's Weekend stories in the future.
Yes, it will. Mm. Oh, I can't wait to see. Yeah. All right. Well, now we got some relatively good news. Target recently announced that they're planning to increase their minimum wage to $11 now. And by 2020,
October, it'll be starting, so like their next month.
Yep.
Yeah. And then in 2020, by 2020, they hope to have it up to 15.
Yeah.
That'll be good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like be able to have people stay on longer instead of just constantly training new people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll save you time and money.
Yeah.
And I'm crossing my fingers here because what I'm hoping is that Target's going to start a trend here.
Yeah.
Yeah, they mentioned Walmart had something similar, but is up to like $10, $11.
Yeah, it is. I know. I used to work there.
And just to give people,
if you were there for a long time, then you were pretty much screwed.
And yeah. If you want a little bit of comparison, the national minimum wage is $7.25.
Still.
Mm-hmm.
So potentially, in 2020, Target will be paying twice what you are legally required to get at a minimum.
Well, that's right. Yeah. Well, let's hope it spreads to all the other companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely not getting that federal minimum wage going up anywhere close.
No.
In at least not right now. Definitely not right now.
They want to take money away from the middle class.
Yeah. Yeah. So, moving on. Dyson. They make the vacuums, don't they?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You guys know the vacuums I'm talking about, right? The ones with the you know, they're made so that you don't have to just go straight back and forth, but they can curve around and ergonomic, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, they're good vacuums.
Like those handheld vacuums and all that.
Mm. Yeah, and they recently announced that they're going to be making electric cars by 2020.
Hmm. Oddly, I'm not as surprised by this as a lot of people are.
Why is that?
Well, what are the component parts of a vacuum cleaner? A controller and an electric motor.
Huh.
These are two things Dyson knows very well. You know, it is a bit of a jump to get to that, to move from that to a full-blown electric car. But the base concepts are there, and they got the people there, and they've also been bringing in talent. So, yeah, I think they can do that.
Well, I mean, you know, they got the chargers, the controllers, and the electric motor, and, you know, Henry Ford kind of did the rest of the work for them. So. Yeah.
Well, there's also the fact that, you know, they did a robotic vacuum last year, so know, it got some AI and stuff in there as well. So I don't know.
And they're planning to infuse a lot of money into this. Yeah. I think it says here about £2 billion.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Which is quite a bit of money to do something on a whim. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big question is whether anybody would actually want to drive a Dyson. They got a marketing problem.
If they go for a cheaper kind of thing.
Yeah.
And like cheaper than what Tesla's cheap option is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is
they might be able to find a good market there.
Yeah.
Like in the Chevy Volt, is it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like that sort of range. Mm-hmm. They might be able to find a good market.
Yeah. Or they could just do like a small two-seater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and
do like those little weird smart cars that I see on occasions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, they do look weird, but they're cheap and they're fuel efficient.
Yep.
So
it's just, oh, they made a real car out of those like kids' cars.
Yeah.
That we used to drive.
Yeah.
Like what the guy from The Simpsons, the very tall man.
Yeah.
Drives.
Oh. All right. So moving on. Dubai is officially taking bids for world's first flying taxis. Because of course they are.
Yeah.
Hopefully these aren't brought to you by Acme as well.
Yeah. So Dubai, it's basically the champagne soaked nutsack of the world, and it is basically everything that every worst stereotype you think about a stinking rich Gulf nation is Dubai. All the things you can think of, you know, the extreme economic inequality, the decadence, yet somehow still retaining to outdated, extremely regressive religious dogma that a lot of other Muslim majority nations don't dare to.
Yeah.
That's Dubai.
Yeah.
Also, they use a lot of slave labor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
And if you look at the actual, the first like prototype they've gotten to test, it looks like a human-sized drone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It works.
It works though.
Yeah, it's got like 18 propellers on this big circular thing. It lasts about 30 minutes for flights, or it can handle about a 30-minute flight. It has like extra batteries, backup rotors, and for the worst case scenario, parachutes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Falling out of the sky could be problematic.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to start somewhere, so...
Yeah, and they're not the only ones doing this. I mean, there's a lot of companies here in the U.S. that are going after that same goal, so this is... There's competition there, so it's going to be fun to watch this.
And I guess it says here, Dubai is also trying to get into the space race.
Oh.
They're planning to send an unmanned probe to Mars by 2021.
Well,
which they can afford it. Weird for an area that's... doesn't have any space program? Yeah.
That's be
like that's going from 0 to 60 without the car.
Yeah. 0 to 60, just loading yourself into the aircraft carrier's catapult directly.
Yeah. All right. So we got Elon Musk news. Because of course we do.
The first thing is that they are very much focused on this Mars mission.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They announced that they have a new type of vehicle called the Interplanetary Transport System, which they also codenamed the BFR.
Yeah.
For Big Fucking Rocket.
Because of course.
So you know nerds were working on this.
Yep.
Decided, hey, we're just going to make a Doom reference here. So this seems to be... it's scaled down from what they were initially planning. It's 31 main engines instead of 42, but can still send about 450 metric tons of stuff up to Mars.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is potentially also going to be able to be used to take stuff to the International Space Station, as well as potentially setting up a moon base and doing missions over there as well. So they got some prototype of this thing, and it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, that's one thing about Tesla and SpaceX and all them. They do have good designers. They do like to make their shit look decent.
Which I did not know this until I read this. Mike Pence is in charge of the new National Space Council. So he is leading some of the government-led parts of the space stuff. Mm. So he's hinted at directing NASA to work on moon missions. Which we kind of probably should do.
Yeah.
Especially if we want to do actual base up there.
Yeah.
And make potential trips to Mars easier.
Would be nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, also we got a bunch of countries around the world that are working on similar types of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So NASA just announced a partnership with Russia, their space agency, which obviously those two are the biggest ones in the world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They worked on the International Space Station together, so I don't think there's any sort of spy shit going on there.
Well, the Russian Space Agency is the part of Russia that actually gives a fuck.
Yeah.
So,
But yeah, that's an interesting thing. Their plans for Mars is they're going to have the first cargo ITS ships launching in 2022, and the first crewed ships would be in 2024.
Guessing that's why Dubai claimed 2021, so they could claim to be there first.
We're going to get there first. And it's going to be a ship that just crashes into the surface of the of Mars.
Yep.
Yeah, so the second part of this whole thing that he was talking about is potentially using these ITS ships as a way to make much faster flight around the world. Essentially planning to be able to get anywhere in the world in less than an hour. I believe essentially it would launch this rocket up into orbit and then be able to essentially travel in space down to where it needs to be, then just travel back down into the atmosphere and all that.
Yeah, which is a sound concept.
It
takes a lot of energy to get up there.
Yeah. So this would not be cheap anyway, or anything that would happen anytime soon.
No. But they are saying that it could end up being only a bit more expensive than regular airline travel in the end, but not right now.
We just have to get to that point.
Yeah.
So it says 39 minutes and 7,000 miles later, the ship re-enters, instead of heading off to another planet, once they leave the Earth's atmosphere, the ship separates, breaks off towards another city like Shanghai. It's going from New York. 39 minutes and 7,000 miles later, the ship re-enters the atmosphere, touchdown on another floating pad. Yeah, so this takes place on the floating pads they have done a lot of their testing with.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially you would get on a boat out to this whole structure, get onto your seat and all that with your luggage, and head out that way and sort of land on another floating pad.
Yeah.
So they say sometimes Hong Kong to Singapore, about 22 minutes. London to Dubai or New York in 29 minutes. Los Angeles to Toronto in 24 minutes. Which, that would change a lot of things if you could get around the world that fast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because right now, if you want to go across the Pacific or the Atlantic, that's at least half a day for the travel. But if it's a 30-minute ride, it's crazy fast. And just, we'll just hop on the rocket over here.
Yeah. Of course, with anything to do with rockets, there's the just ridiculous acceleration. So
That's another thing. So the estimates, about 80 to 200 people per trip. But we don't know, what sort of G-forces they would be enduring, what sort of design the experience would be. The thought of blasting off on a rocket to space is exciting, as is the potential for adding moments of weightlessness to your trip to London or wherever, but will people actually be willing to put their bodies through these kinds of extreme stresses for the sake of saving a few hours off their trip?
Depends how badly you really need to get there.
Yeah. But yeah, it would be... it would really add new meaning to turbulence.
Yeah. Not to mention, floating vomit at the apex stage. That would be problems.
Yeah.
Anyways.
All right, so... Going on from there, we got more science news. The fourth set of gravitational waves from merging black holes has been detected by multiple observers.
Observatories. And so before we've had just one detected.
Yeah.
Which is great and all, but it makes it harder to try to figure out where these black holes are at. So when we get multiple, it allows us to better triangulate the stuff. And the other thing is these black holes merged about 2 billion years ago.
Yep.
So we're just now finding out about this stuff. But we're detecting this stuff more often as our it gets better. And it's some pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As we start to learn more about the universe that we'll probably never see.
Yeah, because it's long dead by now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah. So that's kind of cool. Now we got our movie and entertainment. So, first and foremost, Leonardo DiCaprio and Martin Scorsese are teaming up once again for a Teddy Roosevelt biopic. So I guess Leo's going to be playing Teddy.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's see. Martin Scorsese is directing. Scott Blum is writing it. Not sure what he's done. Oh, good. This is the only thing he's tagged with on this site. but yeah, they've obviously worked together a lot on various other movies, Gangs of New York, Aviator, Shutter Island, Departed, Wolf of Wall Street, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's yet another movie they can work on together.
Yeah. Well, I think Leo could pull it off. He's definitely a talented enough actor to be able to do it.
Yep. I mean, he's already portrayed a historic figure before.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So he can keep doing that.
Yep.
Yeah. But, seeing DiCaprio playing Teddy Roosevelt, that's going to be interesting to see. Because Teddy was he was a character.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's going to come up and just scream, "What's up, bitches?" at some point during the movie.
I guess it mentions here that, one of his biggest achievements was the conversation of reserves and national parks and forests and all that. That was sort of one of the big reasons for DiCaprio to be on board for this project. Because I guess they were trying to do this years ago and didn't work out.
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting. All right. Well, all right. So going on there, we now know that Tom Hanks and David S. Pumpkins are returning for an animated Saturday Night Live special on October the
28th.
It's going to be interesting to see how this turns out.
Yeah.
Because they don't really do... Oh, yeah. I remember this guy now. The character he did. And apparently they're going to make an animated version, and they got a picture of what it's going to look like, and it looks very Scooby-Doo-ish.
Yeah, that would make sense for a SNL animated thing.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see how that happens.
Let's see, Tom Hanks will be doing the voice of David S. Pumpkins. Peter Dinklage is also going to be on there.
Okay.
As well because, as, of course, he is. He's in everything now.
Yeah. Let's see. Sketch creators, Mikey Day, Bobby Moynihan will also be in there. I think those are the two skeletons. And Streeter Seidel is also going to be in there. Let's see. Bento Box Entertainment provides the animation. I'm curious who they are. Oh, Bob's Burgers.
Okay. This could be pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, Bob's Burgers, Brickberry, Border Town, a Harold and Kumar animated show. What?
Yeah, there was one for a short time.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So.
Oh, they did a Jeff Dunham animated show.
Oh.
Ahmed Saves America.
That's
inadvertently.
Yeah.
Did you know he's actually the most popular comedian in the Middle East?
I'm not surprised.
He's very popular in the Midwest.
Yeah.
He's popular down south here too. My dad's met him a couple of times. Because one of the things Jeff does outside of ventriloquism is he does model airplanes and model helicopters, and they have like these big shows down here in Georgia and Alabama, South Carolina, you know. And my dad's been to a couple of those, and he shows up there in person, you know, to talk shop and everything. So he's actually pretty cool. Pretty cool dude. So, yeah. But anyway, moving on. Disney is remaking Hocus Pocus as a TV movie without the original cast.
Why?
Yeah, exactly. Why?
Because it's been 24 years and they can
remake
it like they do everything else.
You know, Bette Midler isn't doing anything. You can always hit her up.
Yeah.
I mean, all three aren't really doing anything.
Yeah.
No.
Kathy and Jimmy doesn't have King of the Hill to do anymore. Sarah Jessica Parker doesn't have anything to do anymore.
Yeah. Disney. Sometimes you fire on all cylinders, and sometimes you do this.
Yeah.
Let's see. This will be written by Scarlett Lacey of The Royals, produced by David Krichner, who produced the original movie. The original director is not involved, which is weird, because the original director obviously did Hocus Pocus and also did the High School Musical. Let's see. They say it'll be a new iteration of the story. So not like a direct remake, but which would make sense because that's very 90s show, movie.
Mm-hmm. I guess they can bring in new characters and, you know, try not to pass it off as a rehash.
Animatronic cat or anything like that.
It's like, yeah, it's one of those meh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It depends on who the cast is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, not having the original cast is not a big deal if they get three really good actresses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and you can still watch that old movie. It's not anywhere.
I mean, the original movie really wasn't, you know, inspiring or anything, but
no, but it was fun.
I mean, it'll play every Halloween, just like
put it on your TiVo.
And
finally, our last story of the week. We now have got the trailer for Ex Machina's writer and director Alex Garland for his next film. I said writer director. I should also mention game designer and novelist. It is for a film called Annihilation, which in turn is based on the novel of the same name by Jeff Vandermeer. And prepare yourself, because it is a serious mindfuck.
Yeah, this trailer didn't really say much of what's going on here.
Yeah, that's because, well, the book doesn't really tell you all that much about what's going on. All
right, then it's true to the book.
What you need to know is, okay, look, here's what you need to know. There's these four women going into this area called Area X. One of them is a, let's see if I can remember, an anthropologist, one of them is a surveyor, another is a biologist, and another is a psychologist. And they're going into this area. It's called Area X. It's completely cut off from the rest of civilization, and it's completely abandoned. And basically, they're the 12th expedition going into this area. And sort of the whole idea of the place is trying to find out just what the fuck happened down here. Because it seems to imply all of these weird things, specifically like there may have been like this research station here, and at some point this weird plant growth or something started showing up, spraying out these spores that may have been toxic, may have been hallucinogenic. And then they start finding like all these weird signs and stuff everywhere. It's, like I said, it's a mind fuck. And knowing Alex Garland, if he can do what he did with Ex Machina, he'll knock it out of the park.
Yeah,
it's got some good talent in there as well.
Yeah,
Natalie Portman, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Gina Rodriguez, Tessa Thompson, Tuva Novotny, and Oscar Isaac.
Mm. Yeah,
it's out February 23rd next year.
That's soon.
Yep.
So.
And apparently they actually gave a couple of these characters actual names. Because in the book,
they kind of would have to.
Because in the book, they actually are just called by their profession. So, but yeah, it's you look at that trailer, and there is a lot to unpack there. You know, it actually kind of reminds me of The Witness. Like, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, like, there's a scene in the trailer where you see, like, these statue-like people.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, something fucked up happened here.
Yep.
Yeah.
Except I don't know that you find out what that is in The Witness. I assume you'll probably find out in this movie.
Yeah.
And I guess the good thing for them is it's a trilogy of books, so...
Oh, yeah.
Trilogy of movies.
Three movies.
Yeah. So, all right. So,
if you give it to Peter Jackson, we'll do three movies based on one book, so...
Yeah, that's true.
Single-handedly ruin all the goodwill you had from the first trilogy.
Although, here's the thing. Was that Peter Jackson, or was that more the studio?
Yeah, it was the studio.
Making him stretch it out into three movies.
Yeah,
it's always the studio. But they also had Peter Jackson, so they said, we can get away with this.
Yeah. it mostly worked. But anyways.
Mostly being the key phrase there. But
All I know is I love the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Had the extended editions and all that, and I have not even begun to start getting the Hobbit stuff and watch.
I actually had the Hobbit box set, and I have not watched it once.
It's always like I see the sale on like the regular editions. Like nobody wants the regular editions.
No, I want the one.
Give me the extended. I want all of it so I can watch none of it.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I'm not watching the appropriate amount of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we now have a show, I guess.
Yep.
All right, so I would like to remind why do I always say viewers? I swear to God, you people are not watching to this. You're listening to it. Seriously, you don't want to watch this. We're all ugly as shit. But anyway, if you have something you'd like to comment about, have a question to ask, have something you want us to read on the air, or just have suggestions about something you think we should improve or do on the show, you can write into us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've got it linked in the show notes. Also, on top of iTunes, you can hear us on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, and anywhere that fine podcasts like ours can be heard.
Right.
And also, we do want you to write into, because our audience is expanding. And for the life of us, we have no goddamn idea why. So... If you'll write into us, let us know. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Filippo Nalfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Logia, I'd like to say goodnight. Keep strong, Puerto Rico. And we still got 3 more years of Trump. Or do we?